if everything is intimately involved in everything.
Yes, everything would be intimately involved with everything.
Then it has to all, it's all included.
All included.
So it's all, and there's no particulars, so it's nothing.
Yes.
Oh, good.
If this were something, it couldn't do this. We can only do this because it's nothing. Yeah. And it is no thing. You know, if you want to borrow from the revelations of scientists with strong microscopes, or, you know, theoretical suggestions about the building blocks of matter itself. It's nothing. It's clearly nothing. How it vibrates, if that's the right word, to appear like this could only be possible because it's nothing. So it can transmute and conjure into every or anything. Yeah. If it were actually everything, we'd be in trouble.
You know, it seems more accurate to me, not that there is any accuracy anywhere, to call it a mysterious weirdness than to say nothing.
Fine.
Because nothing implies nothing.
That's a correct implication.
This is not void.
This is not void.
It's not void, but it's nothing other than that.
It's just a lot more to nothing than you think.
It's way more to nothing than you think.
Gotta have something if you want to be with me.
I think it's not that if you want to be.
Stream of consciousness.
Well, any set of memes to refer to what's irrefutable are going to be, right?
Meaningless.
Representational at best.
Right. Representational. Yeah, right. So that's really the kernel of the yogic endeavor to appreciate what waking up might look or feel like. Everything or anything thought, any tail you pin on this donkey is representational. All language is representational.
It's funny because you can do a task with the language running and it can piss you off and feel like effort. And you can do a task with the language running still, but just not buy into it, and it feels so different.
Yes.
That's like a big difference.
Well, that's why mindfulness is sold the way that it's sold.
As a negotiation to a suffering that usually happens. If you can get mindful enough, then that rat on the wheel head is not going to piss you off on a regular basis.
That's the idea. Yeah. The idea behind mindfulness, at least at a certain stage of it, is one is not successfully inoculated by the virus of thinking, of association. So then there is rest in activity.
Yeah.
It goes deeper than that because, you know, Thich Nhat Hanh sells mindfulness and sells it very well. But so then you have an international community of people being mindful, though underneath that they're all seething and, you know, not really happy, but they certainly have become skilled at being mindful. So it's not quite enough, because then you create a culture of mindfulness, which is a culture of violence.
It's people being mindful.
That's right. Yeah. Right? See, once you create an ideal way to be in a group, you're in trouble if you're not pulling your ideal weight that day.
They recommend you for not being mindful.
Oh, okay. Well, you never admit to it. You hide it, cover it up.
Well, all that happens, right? All these compensations happen within any kind of formal community that is organized around, right?
A way to be.
A way to be. An ideal way to be.
Also, in your family, when you go to work in the morning.
There you go.
Wherever you go.
Everyone is imposed. Everyone is imposing on you.
Rules become.
Yeah.
So you just change as you feel like throughout the day.
That's right. You have to be adroitly schizophrenic.
Nobody has the power.
Not to be noticed.
Nobody can truly impose it on you. We impose it on ourselves. So we want something, and that's why we impose it on ourselves.
That's one way to go.
Those are the rules.
And you could also.
That's why we impose it on other people.
Well, you could also say this behaves it on itself. Because you don't really have enough agency to be successful at self-imposing anything.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not choosing that. It just happens.
Identification with everything that's present in your experience is not your doing. It's just not. Mm-hmm. Now, you don't shift from identification to not being identified because you didn't do identification in the first place. So that strategy is not going to succeed. That's why mindfulness doesn't actually succeed. Because it's a strategy about psychiatric preference, mood preference, awareness preference. It's a behavioral imposition. It's violent.
So that I can get something out of it.
Well, whatever the utility might be, like I could remain with you Buddhists because I am capable of being at least as mindful as you are, and knowing me, I'm going to try to be better at being mindful than you are, because I'm an asshole. There's one in every crowd. Yeah. Hey, your mindfulness is good, but watch this. You know? High five on the mindfulness. You know, as you're walking through the kitchen, right? High five on the mindfulness. But those trainings are also useful, right? Like potty training, they're useful.
Yeah, you just
potty training has its place, right?
Even the social norms, you know, we don't sit here at breakfast and someone farts loudly, and, you know, we have certain social norms.
Courtesy has a place.
We have rules.
I just haven't had to fart loudly yet.
Yeah.
I do.
I never found I had any real control.
Yeah.
That was too loud.
What the fuck was that? I'm going to go have a talking over here. Yeah.
That's right, it scared my dog one time.
Your dog hasn't spoken to you since.
That's what killed her.
Dave's hearing started going and he started saying, what?
The statement, I'm sorry,
yeah.
Not well, that we're not doing this. Because that actually, technically, I don't think makes any sense.
Well, that destroys the whole effort and effortless thing right there. Yeah.
What?
Well,
I didn't get what you said at all.
There is a built-in reward system. I mean, if we can observe that has this function in the human realm in a certain way. And if you repeat certain behaviors, there's more pain, discomfort, alienation. And other behaviors, there's more connection, integration.
I don't agree with that at all. In my experience.
Yeah, I'm just throwing it out.
Well, that's just a varying experience.
The book about the truth here.
Most people, like most normal
people. Well, if you'd fart loudly, like, we'd take it more seriously. It's kind of like a Tibetan trumpet call.
For the temple bells.
Friends that influence people.
What's, yeah?
First, there's a your. So, and there's a your. If there is a your, then she is doing it. She's doing everything.
Yes, you could go there. Why not?
Your is ownership.
Well, Or if you say you are not doing this, that implies there's a the particular, yeah. which is not the particular. Yeah. And if there's not the particular, then you are doing this because you are.
Sure. You can associate your with the absolute that does everything, or your being the local bioplasma that, you know, that has preferences.
That lives in a reward system.
Yes.
Accepted? All right.
This is a group that starts loudly. Don't forget that.
But how, what else can you say?
Anything goes.
I would say we don't believe that.
What I was suggesting was when you look at the curious power and poignancy of identification, your, meaning you as a willful creature, are not doing that. You are not responsible for the appearance of a profound identification.
I had the third. Sure, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Thank you. That's what the useless so point was then and now.
That come up when you were referring to the night.
No. See, that's subtler than that. The reason it might be useful to emphasize the nature of identification, not the consequences of identification. Not the drama field that appears in your mind, your heart, your emotions, your thymus, your day, your relationships. Not that. Because all of that is a waveform, in a manner of speaking, a subsequent waveform of primary identification.
Okay, thank you. Just take a little extra time.
That's great.
Waveform of primary identification. Where the self is prominent, you get these effects.
Sure, yeah, right. It appears as cause and effect. It's not, though. You know, when we review or comment on our experience, on behavior, on the, you know, the primate bloom that's appearing on the planet, right? We're reporting on very ultimately mysterious weirdness through language, which, you know, conjures a thing to think about, right? Conjures that something is true, or might even conjure that present experience is the consequence of something, or the nature, the character, the texture of present experience is like the consequence of something, which makes it look like if you would only practice mindfulness, you would suffer less. That's how all of those strategies are sold, right? So then, oh, well, I've been suffering. I'm going to join the order of interbeing, go to Thich Nhat Hanh retreats, take the vows, you know, the precepts, do my best at following the commitments I've made to those precepts. Not tell anyone when I've failed, but tell everyone when I've succeeded. And then I'll work my way up through the organization. So then, years later, after attending so many more retreats and becoming all that successful at mindfulness, I'll get a brown jacket. Now everyone knows that I'm an accomplished mindfulness practitioner within the order of interbeing. And then if I really want to go further than that and become an arhat, or whatever the words are, to become a teacher or mentor to others, then I will seek in his organization what's called the lamp. So you go to more retreats, more dana contribution, right? More mindfulness days, you publish, you hold meditations at your home or locally, you start to become someone within the context of that organization and its commitments, and, you know, then they'll give you the lamp training. Now you're an official lamp holder. There's not that many of them. I don't think it's all that well publicized, but it's present. You know, and after that, you become part of the elite that are going to end up killing each other once Thich Nhat Hanh passes.
Who has the brightest lamp?
Yeah, so they'll, you know, unless he officially names, you know, one or a committee of enlightened persons to control the organization after he dies, there will be, you know, a certain amount of mayhem, backstabbing, and Rome burning going on.
And maybe that's the cycle of the folly, of very strong local identification. This is the ultimate way. Oh, no, 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 I've got it. And then it begins again fresh. It becomes an organization, the structure, and then it collapses again.
Right? That's it.
Every moment.
What you didn't touch on was the, what I would assume, based on my experience, the undercurrent of ongoing failure and increasing desperation. As you go further and further, you know you're not more peaceful. You know that you haven't gotten there. And what you do is you increase your investment in the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow.
Sure.
So it's put off more intently into the future because you've done all of this and you've, you know, this and this and you've gotten so far, and yet you can't help but see you're a total abject failure. But there is
not peace. If you're lucky.
If you're honest enough, I guess.
If you're lucky, you'll see that.
But then it's like, okay, now, you know, you got to get that pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. And then when you have some bozo come along and tell you it's not there, you're really screwed.
If you're lucky.
And you'll never get there from anything you do here. Then it's like, okay.
You have to have a standard of measure of some destination or goal and comparing the present as a failure or not to that made up ultimate.
How are you or any of us ever successful at committing to failure? Just like that.
If I believe in some idealized state that I'm not arrived at yet, I fail continuously until I match that, or recognize I can make stuff up about what's ideal and successful and me matching it or not, or forget it. The measures and standards have just been maybe disregarded. I can't say thrown out because it probably will still occur.
Measures and standards are hallucinatory. And therefore, if in my experience and my consciousness, I try to accuse myself or hold myself by a hallucinatory standard, then I might have the feeling of failing or succeeding, of making progress or needing to make course corrections. And all of this is appearing hallucinatorily. Yes.
Constantly hallucinating.
That's right. Yeah.
Go straight to the heart of it.
Well, I think of people that we term to be psychotic or schizophrenic. And you know, there's always this question whether the wiring is kind of mixed up or what's going on there. But it seems like this so-called consensus reality that we have is as much a question to them as all the other things. So, you know, it's just that they may accept certain things as a replacement for the consensus reality. So they might still be crazy in almost anybody's estimation, but they might actually be pretty much on, you know, pretty enlightened. Mm-hmm. I think
I mean,
people that are determined by society to be psychotic.
Oh, I get it.
And you know, it seems to me, and I could be way wrong, that it's like this.
Most likely,
this inclination towards human annihilation, I mean, I don't mean in a physical sense.
That's too bad.
Is in no particular strata of society. It's everywhere, sort of here, there, everywhere. You determined to be crazy by society, smart, not so smart, you know, whatever. But that there's still a possibility of reaching outside of it.
Well, I have a story. They just came out with the first drug that they think helps autism. The problem with autism is that the neurons more synapses than is healthy. And so usually they are naturally pruned, but in autism they don't get pruned, so they have more synapses.
You're taking more information?
Too
that?
Much information at one time.
Huh.
So that's sounds like that.
It does. Wherever there's synapses that are strong, where there's the natural lines, I mean, there's a fixation on it.
So, well, I think it translates into getting too much information.
Yeah.
In the mom.
I like this. It's cut like a little pie. It's actually very nice.
The first concept would be one of a human condition. I mean, I don't know, but you can see evidence of it everywhere. I don't see that same evidence of time, let's say, in other critters. I mean, there can be some neurotic neurosis or whatever in, you know, dogs and stuff like that because they hang out with people. But seems to me to be a very particularly human situation and a human condition. You know, just what's sort that? Of natural acceptance of the consensus reality of the physicality, the materialist view of things.
Yes.
Being hung up on, you know, the thought patterns.
There's always been people saying that it's not as it appears. It's always been that also, you know?
A little cheese.
Okay.
This is
I'll have a little bit of that before you pass it
down. That's cheese?
Oh, she pissed.
I want a little bit of that.
Another set of these.
And can I get another orange juice?
I should use a cool. Thank you.
Crazy?
Huh?
Just a little bit, please. I love that.
A what?
A little bit of bread.
No, I don't like bread. Okay.
Right through the heart.
I don't know if I ever should do that.
Just to get a comparison.
Jesus.
Do the cheese test.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
What kind of cheese? You got goat, blue, and something else, right?
Looks like, what do you call it?
All right, so
brie.
Yeah,
brie.
I don't know what
fatty.
Goat. I haven't seen goat with a rice.
Like,
blue, brie, and something.
So blue, green,
camisole legs are blue, and then you have, this is pickle bear, it's like a French chicken pot, that's a brief type, from my
Okay, nice.
Can you take a break from serving some of that? Thanks.
Maybe.
I'm
going
to switch these because I got
it.
I just got one.
Yeah.
Okay. I just don't like safe blue cheese, like bad blue cheese, but that's good.
Real blue cheese is good.
Disconcerting in this process now is that the realization that I'm never really talking to anyone who's coherent.
Including yourself.
Yeah, exactly. I'm in,
Oh, wow. Yes, please.
Wow. It's for everybody.
You like the best.
No, that's all. Nan's going to charge us $1 for a piece of bread.
It's expensive. Very expensive.
It's
warm.
Thanks, Dad.
Which one? That's yours. That's mine. Where's yours? Okay. Are you all mixed up?
I'm drinking regular. I think it's still making noise.
You can't find anyone to talk to? Is that the... Everyone's
eating so well.
Oh my God, this is so good.
Thank you.
It doesn't sound
good.
You might want to call my ID.
Everyone's enlightened, so we just eat now. We don't talk anymore.
Better that way.
After camp all week, I kind of feel like I want some bacon.
That cream?
Yeah, it's
cream can navigate it.
It's not for the
noodles.
What's that?
Oh, that's a yes. Got paper for sure.
And you actually went with them?
Yeah, they actually accepted us.
Oh, you got yours.
Yeah. You know, the self-referential nature, I don't know what else to call it. There's so much inertia. You know what I mean?
So
I mean,
just inertia? Inside.
Inertia. In yourself?
Yeah, I mean, just to... I mean, it's hard. You can't... I find it hard just to hang off sometimes without reflecting on my hanging out experience. You know, so I'm like,
I'm getting water now. I forgot to get water, I'm gonna get water right now.
No, that's all right. I'm no hurry. You know,
you're gonna go anywhere.
Yeah. It's kinda like a petri dish. Just stuff just grows.
Well, I mean, you know, it's like, I guess it's not gonna stop, but this whole idea of being able to not take ownership. I mean, that's a problem. I mean, I see it. I see it. And certainly,
I'm down.
It seems to make sense. But
to me, it's nothing that I can do.
As opposed to, as contrasted with things you can do? The nothing I can do thing is flawed because you've never done anything anyway. Why make a big stink about nothing I can do since you never have done anything? Why start now?
You know, I think of curling as an example. You know, the curling where you the heavy slug of a thing that goes down the court or whatever, and they're brushing in front of it. I think the best we can do is like brush like crazy and make it go in a particular direction.
We're brushing.
Not even that. Come on, Jeff.
You have a little.
Yeah. Why do you care which direction it goes on?
A lot of effort there.
You want to look. You want to look at the. Let's call it the neurosis or dissatisfaction that you can't be where you are, as you are, when you are, without commentary.
Yes.
Without the nagging sense of a disparate self always upstaging you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So you look at it, comes, it goes.
Well, you notice that's what's happening.
Well, you don't have to do anything about it or not do anything about it. But it might be useful to look at the genesis that it is appearing in the first place. You don't need to get free of anything because you're not presently afflicted by anything. But if you feel like you're in a loop of inertial self-reference, which is disturbing to you, then perhaps you respond to that. Not by
effort.
Well, not by anything. Because this appearing as irrefutable experience, landing in you a certain way, which could include the inertial annoyance of constant self-referencing, you can respond. By discovering its genesis, its nature. Not by presuming that it is just so, and therefore I will figure out how to correct my behaviors not to be so annoyed by the presence of this inertial self-referencing.
Never mind.
No, never mind.
Yes.
If anybody wants ice, I can try to get some ice.
Trust in the.
No, don't trust in anything.
Great.
No, because then you've got another strategy going, right? Then you've got a thing. You've got a thing to do. An ideal atmosphere to inhabit. Oh, I'll just trust in grace. Why do that? What did grace ever do for you?
Don't trust a bitch.
That's just as plausible.
Yeah, for me, the payoff is less suffering, more relief, and it's still a self that's kind of behind that.
Yeah, if you or any of us have measured something we refer to as suffering, and some other thing which appears to be the relief from suffering, then you're still in the game and on the lookout for the condemnation of suffering or the gratitude for the release of or from suffering.
Can separate out the fact that it is the biohuman essence that's actually feeling a discomfort.
You could go that way, but only so far. Vipassana meditation, if you go on a retreat and then sit through the instruction periods, the Vipassana meditation is basically about alerting yourself to the fact that nothing is so. and they do it in stages. Thinking, feelings, emotivity, bodily sensations, right? The entirety of the flora and fauna that make up the profundity of your present experience is dismantled in the Vipassana training.
And yet you can experience it because of the appearance of the human.
No.
No?
No.
Would they no longer experience?
There's no appearance of human. There's only experiencing. There's only disembodied, radiant sensitivity. The body, the bioluminescence, the earth, the world, the atmosphere, the food, the digestion, the elimination are all consequential to the primacy of the dreaming. So even if you dismantle everything that's appearing in your experience by seeing that it is impermanent, that it is unsatisfactory, as in inertial self-referencing, right? And that it is not self, then that package, if you're lucky, is supposed to be the deliverer of your liberation.
Aspects.
But applied intelligently to an effortful discovery through, right, cushion time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the cushion time is accompanied by a succinct educational process of sober recognition that everything appearing in experience is not so. Not what you think it is.
It sounds like it could be somewhat valuable.
Profoundly.
It does.
Profoundly valuable. It doesn't work.
I knew there was a butt in there somewhere.
But that doesn't mean it's, you know, not worth doing.
Well, as you were talking, I was thinking, well, our conversations do the same thing.
Yes.
It's always about layers.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a little bit exaggerated to have to sit, to do sitting and walking meditation, you know, 12 or 14 hours a day or more, 16 hours a day, with, you know, meal breaks, get this instruction, and keep sitting and walking. And then figuring out how you're going to entertain yourself once you've committed to a retreat where there's no speaking, there's no reading, there's no media, there's no cell phone. Right? You have voluntarily isolated yourself from the details of the world in a residential center where you're committing yourself to receive the education and practice of Vipassana. And it's not trivial. Again, it doesn't work. Because awake is already so and is not the consequence or culmination of all this cushion time.
So this also doesn't work?
No, it can't work.
Right. This.
Yeah, no, you don't do this because it works.
You do this for breakfast.
Yeah, extra just to have a good meal.
And that works?
And that works. Yeah. Nothing can work. I mean, what, you know, though we get together frequently, at least, you know, as best I or we can, it's not meant to be a repetitive liturgy. It's not meant to be a practice. Discovery is all this is. Intimate radiant, expressive discovery is all this is. Suffering, you could say, occurs because of a habit of inertial self-referencing. So then a conversation like this one might be aimed at revealing the nature of inertial self-referencing.
And suffering is not even in the equation.
It can be, but it's... Why focus on it?
Well, it can be what gets you in the door.
Yeah, it tends to be. You know, very few people go to a meditation retreat because it's court-ordered. Or it's better than a cruise. They go because they're mad as hell and they're not going to take it anymore. They want the relief from inertial self-referencing, which causes us profound dukkha, dissatisfaction, irritability, apprehension, the bane of temporality, of self.
It also gives you some relief from the environment. Constantly reinforces itself. Mm-hmm. Makes sense. You could suggest that the vipassana does reinforce the self that's becoming more aware and awake, but you could use that time if you wish. And you're free from, oh wow, that's great, or you really need to do better next time, or I'm going to get a promotion, or I'm afraid I'm going to get fired. Or,
those bastards on those retreats will find a way to shame you. They just do.
Well, I do notice in some of the teachings or the readings, there's always a chapter or a paragraph that indicates the dissatisfaction and the insatiable nature of trivial pursuits, you might say,
mm-hmm.
and reinforces the practice of going beyond that, which, again, behind it all, which you're reminded of, there's still a strong sense of self that's improving. Or, depending on where someone happens to be, and you or I or any of us here, it has a whole different flavor, meaning, but it doesn't mean at all.
I think if you say the word or more than like two or three times.
What's that? Did you say what?
You're like or.
I thought you said whore.
No. Well, not too. Say the word
whore. Are we going rowing with a prostitute? Is that what you're trying to say? Okay.
I guess you could easily say and.
Well, let's say you just remarked on some beautiful reflections. Where are they now? Just gone. Right? That's the way everything is going. All of my poetry and exertions, exhortations, seductions, grand explanations, insistences, encouragements, discouragements, right? Rude mishandling of people's kind attention is what? Gone. This is gone. It's gone. It's all gone. Our job, then, on this Mission Impossible, is to see if it's possible to learn to enjoy already gone.
I like the enjoy part.
If we can't discover an enjoyment associated with already gone, it's not going to attract our attention. We're addicted to receive serotonin benefits, like friends with benefits, We're addicted to receiving serotonin benefits from inertial self-referencing.
But there's serotonin deficits or whatever as well.
That's right.
In equal measure.
That's when we mature.
At least, or more.
As we mature and see that going to inertial self-referencing for benefits has become too frequently accompanied by detriment.
Yeah, and when all we have to replace, you know, the positive side is hope. It's like, well, what the heck?
Well, you've got alcohol and food and drugs and sex and science and Buddhism.
The Four Noble Truths.
Yeah.
I got a six.
You've got yoga and Vipassana and the work. You've got 1,000 things that are available to you, some for high cost, some relatively inexpensive, that become temporary ameliorations once you become dissatisfied with inertial self-referencing.
It pops into my brain every once in a while, Jack Nicholson thing. You want the truth, you can't handle the truth. That actually has some power.
Well, that's why there's hatha yoga, so that you can handle the truth. The whole idea of purifying the nervous system, the endocrine system, the alimentary canal, of being ideally sattvic and isolated from the world, is so that you can build enough residual fatty tissue in your very thin frame to handle the truth. At least that's how a lot of yoga is practiced and sold. Which is also backwards, because all of the asanas and pranayamas or other things that emerged that became demonstrative in yoga culture did not originate with people faking it until they made it. They emerged by virtue of realization already occurring and then expressing yoga. Yoga was an expression of realization, not created as a practice profile to get to realization.
Yeah, sure, of course.
Of course, like, why is the sun hanging in the sky right about where it is? And why? And how much does the earth weigh? I mean, Thich Nhat Hanh and friends, east, west, and all over the world, that are selling, valuing, and encouraging that you sit on the cushion, it's all monkey see, monkey do, because they think that's what the Buddha did under the Bodhi tree to get enlightened.
Yeah.
He could care less. He wasn't meditating.
He'd been there, done that already.
That's right. He was boogieing down. The Buddha was boogieing with Mara. On that round, the Buddha came out on top. Wouldn't the earth be a lot different today if the Buddha gave all of his students the boogie woogie instead of the Four Noble Truths?
That's a whirling dervish.
That's right.
All boogie is empty.
We have the whirling dervishes to fulfill.
That's right. We have the Sufi dervishes.
That might help you out of your head a little bit.
I would guess. For sure.
And you would be enlightened. Oh my God, she passed out.
Right? That's it.
Now, the utility of creating a reduction sauce. And by reduction sauce we mean we throw you in the pan and we simmer low heat, sometimes high heat, low heat, and all of your hysteria simmers off. Like, that's how you make distilled water. All of your hysteria simmers off. So the true yogic adventure is, let's jump in the pan, put on a low heat, hang on as best you can while all of your hallucination is simmered off. Then what you're left with is the revelation of the primary dissatisfaction with inertial self-referencing. So then that's where your attention goes. If your attention is stolen or seduced by the circumstances and events of your life and all the chaos and dissatisfaction that's going on, you don't have enough calories, enough energy, enough poignant attention to crack the puzzle of primary subjective identification.
You're not paying any attention.
You don't have the capacity yet, the maturity to pay attention to what's at the root, so that we're flailing about in symptom. Now, where does the Course in Miracles go? I would say, from my own observations of it and participation in it, you know, which is shy, is that it's dealing with symptoms.
The seekers, when they deal with symptoms sufficiently, come to the conclusion that it is not helpful and therefore can boil that off.
The lucky ones do. Yeah. There's a bunch of people that are professional Course in Miracles devotees and teachers and make a living from, you know, creating, what are they called when you have a hallelujah meeting?
Revival.
Pentecostal?
Right? Good, yeah. I mean, good or successful Course in Miracle teachers create revival experiences.
Wow.
For many, many people. And so, thank you so much. And so they make a living doing so. But where they're hanging out, again, from the certain amount of personal experience I've had with it, is it's all focused on remediation for the hysteria of circumstances and events. And even the miracles that you're hoping might appear in your life are also somatically and psychiatrically tethered. I don't see the Course in Miracles being used in the way that it could actually be used, which is a big baseball bat for revelation, for awakening.
It's too many words.
Hooks, right? If I like glue will evoke my attention more than another person. If I'm a real word-centric person with religiosity terms, that trap me or incarcerate me by my own.
Oh, I think it's helpful
activity,
for a number of people. Yeah.
There can be a breakthrough, but if I hold on to that beyond a certain point, it then has weight of its own, and then starts to pull back.
These are many of the symptoms that appear while we're in the frying pan simmering off, right? What's superfluous?
So they may have been bringing a bigger lot into the Course of Miracles than they carry.
They were more encumbered for me.
And
there's a lot of Catholics that it appeals to because
if you've shown up at a meeting, right, any meeting, something's happened. Yeah. If you submit yourself to anything or anyone, group or otherwise, to investigate the nature of affliction and seek relief from affliction, you're on to something. Just because I have a bias toward the lowest common denominator of the nature of primacy, then I just naturally like to boil down, boil down, boil down, boil down. Here's our present experience. So this is the most poignant laboratory for us to work in, which is right here. Right? And even that's a very steep invitation for many people.
Yeah, they're looking for hooks. You know, I mean,
you have to give up the hope.
The hope, yeah.
You have to discover how,
for sure,
how difficult and fun it is to be present, to not be overwhelmed by hypothetical and anecdotal rumination.
It's the steepest.
In our culture, giving up hypothetical storytelling, anecdotal hysteria, and learning what it means to feel present is very steep.
You have to, in some way, be able to see that it's not necessary. It doesn't do anything.
What's not necessary?
The hysteria.
Ah.
It's not like an effective means of getting what you want or whatever you're trying to do.
Yes. So then if you're lucky, if you've been in the pan long enough, and time is not really an issue, it's the quality of the chef, meaning you, right? You're the sous and you're the executive chef. You've got yourself in a reduction sauce. You've got the heat just right and you're boiling yourself off. Life's doing it for you. Then maybe you start to feel the firsthand effect of genuine textural intimacy with yourself as presence, not as story, not hypothetically, not anecdotally. We don't care about the animals or the other Buddhists. Not that we don't care about them, but we just don't try to place ourselves in their mind to imagine what they must be feeling and thinking. In that way, we don't care about them. Right? The asan for your awareness is best here.
Is best here.
Best here.
Not so good somewhere else.
Not so good. Not so useful someplace else. So the boiling continues because we are restless, creative, evocative, storytellers. Consciousness is very, very playful, profoundly so. And we are as playful. So the yoga, in the physical yoga, if there were one, permits you to handle, to tolerate the profundity of present experience without diluting it into anecdotal, hypothetical storytelling, not diluting your present experience by spinning off from off and away from yourself. This is not simple. Because this is so creative, it's so profoundly, joyfully, playfully, irresponsibly creative that what appears in your mind as association is made of that same energy, that same prana, that same radiant delight. So you have to learn through association, through call it practice, how to sit in the radiant profundity of your own experience without dissipating into explanation, into story. Feel yourself again. See how awareness, the profundity of your experience, can actually rest in itself without dilution, without deferral, without avoidance or escape. And this has nothing to do with mind, clearly, or will, curiously. It's bright. You might feel yourself as bright. And it's that primary brightness which becomes mirth, myth, anecdotal reference, storytelling, hypothetical discovery. It's that brightness which is source of everything that appears in mind.
It's metabolized in the way the mind-body seems to be able to cope or whatever.
Just, it is a metabolizing.
Yeah. Right.
So you have to kind of put on a seatbelt and feel yourself.
If you're not going to get off the exit, I understand. Stay for the ride.
Yeah. And by doing this, not that it's a doing or a practice, but once you get the sense of it, curiously, you know how to return to it. You know how to occupy your own present experience without deferral, avoidance, or dilution. And if it's joyful, and we hope that it is, you'll be incentivized to return.
And is that reflected in
yes.
art? I mean, could you say that?
Where is it not reflected? Find a place, any place, where it's not reflected.
It seems maybe say more purely reflective.
It strikes me that art, when you're in the position of self, art tells you there's something more to be in that position, yet be in that place.
What's wrong with this? If this isn't telling you as much as art does.
So art has a murder kit to the dentist.
Then you should be at an art gallery.
True. But that doesn't mean other people will recognize that.
There's no other people here than you. If art has the hit that you need, whatever that means, to wake up, go to an art gallery. Go now.
If
it's baseball, get on the train and go to the field. You know what I mean? I'm not saying anyone should go anywhere or do anything, but it's just, right, follow your bliss. Or if you recognize that art is evocative in that way, how frequently do you go to an art gallery? So it might be useful, again, you discover it right about here, right about now.
Well, yeah, for me it's more in making art, if you want to put it that way, or rather than checking out other art, which occasionally it's like, whoa, you know, but...
There's no occasionally. You're spinning. Don't spin. Be here. Put your seatbelt on. Occupy the profundity of your present experience without metaphor. It's not easy. But you have no choice. But even if it hurts in the attempt, that's useful. Mindfulness doesn't actually have anything to do with what's going on, because that would be an extroversion. Mindfulness, as it boils off, is a first-hand encounter with the myth of subjective identification. No, no, don't.
Are in a place
there are no people.
There's just speak
about yourself presently,
so case,
not about people at an art gallery.
I'm working on it.
What are you working?
His comment.
That's his problem. You don't have to participate in it.
I know I don't.
Okay.
Are you going about your own free will?
You're choosing to. All right. So yeah. Yes. So
I found that the communication didn't. You didn't get what he was saying, that's why.
I didn't want to get it.
All right.
But I can appreciate it. Of course, art. Of course, peak experiences, a beautiful face, falling in love, divorcing, are all powerful reminders of something transcendent.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you again.
Okay, glad I could... And you notice that whatever was meaningful to you a moment ago that was worth speaking extemporaneously about is gone. You're gone. So there's all of these, call them challenging but luscious layers of being in intimate relationship with your present experience that releases you like a retreat from anecdotal hysteria, from imagining that you came here from a place or that you've got anything else to do but be here. How are we going to realize what this is or isn't if we're always elsewhere? If we're living in imagination in a virtual world, that's not happening. How often am I elsewhere seeking pleasure in the future? Behavioral correction that will ameliorate past suffering. It's too late to ameliorate past suffering.
Or future suffering.
Impossible to ameliorate future suffering.
Well, you know, but speaking of art, the there are times it
there are no times.
This is hard to get out.
Thank God.
Yeah.
There are no times. There's only this.
What I feel is that there's a... I could sit there and be quiet and just be happy. Or just be... Or not happy, or just be myself. Just sitting there. Without a lot going on mentally.
Okay.
There comes a point when something's going to happen mentally, and I'm going to go off. You know, there's this...
Well, like you're doing now.
Like I'm doing now.
Yeah.
There's this... There's the raw noticing, and then there's the boredom factor. Okay?
Yeah.
because the noticing maybe it seems to be that there's a certain honing of it or something. At some point, there's a process that tends to just spontaneously start up. So it could be a thought process, but sometimes it's an unfolding process, like in art. And I feel that when it goes in the direction of just that creative unfolding, that there's something that's really special about that, as opposed to saying, okay, I got to go, you know, sweep the house or do, you know, or not even that. Like,
in other words, living your life could be joyful.
Living your life could be joyful if there's
love and happiness.
Doing something creative, there's just an expression. I mean, closest I get to that is with my camera. You know, so I'll go and I'll do something with the camera. And I'm not.
What about the reflections in this table?
Well, what we're trying to introduce is how creative, satisfying, immersive, transcendent, yeah, luscious, and liberating this moment is.
Yes, exactly. And what I struggle with is there. I can't rest in that sometimes. There has to be some action.
I feel like art evokes that very thing. When you look at a piece of art,
what do you consider to be art?
The moment, it does exactly what you just said.
Okay. Why did you leave the gallery then?
I never went to the gallery, but I still know. I got a painting looking right at me right now, which does that very thing.
So paintings are art?
Well, it's just what I'm using as a term.
And what I'm referring to.
I thought we had resolved the art part of the conversation. I like art too.
I think we need a field trip to the school.
Does anybody want this last little piece of toast and then
the moment?
No, that's yours.
That's what it brings.
The
power of the moment, regardless of what kind of art it is. And indeed, yes, the shining of the table does the same thing.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I'm getting
dogmatic. No,
I'm dogmatic, aren't I?
Well.
Kick me.
I mean, what's not art?
It is a useful observation to see that thus far in your life, though you have enjoyed many poignant moments of the cessation of inertial self-referencing, you haven't yet been delivered to it as a permanent condition.
Do you know anybody who has been delivered to it as a permanent condition?
The only one that it should occur to is you. No one else makes a difference. Let's say, yes, I know dozens. Do you want to call, write, go to lunch with them? I mean, or you want it just as proof that it's possible?
Maybe proof that it's possible. What happens?
Huh? I want it to rub off.
Yeah, something like that too.
Great. Your life is an open, miraculous book.
It might be
worthwhile to find person or persons who, let's say, dwell in something in a permanent manner, as if there were one, to ask them face-to-face, is it possible and does it wear off? Meaning on me, from you to me. Yeah, do it. I have.
Would that be like Peter Brown? He might be like,
you went on retreat with him, you tell me.
I would say he's not there, he's pretty close.
Close is good, so if the only thing you can find is close, spend time with that.
But I don't know. I mean, how would you be able to tell the difference? I mean,
you wouldn't.
There's a special test.
Difference if it smacked you in the gut. If it's wearing a breast.
Although, I think if you have
carrying a lamp.
Conversation, yes, with somebody like that, there's no, I don't know,
you just like met him in a bookshop, you'd be like, that guy's like boring, whatever.
Well, yeah, when you are conversing with people like that, as in the Jeff, it's kind of annoying because they will reinforce you.
Jeff might be, I don't know about you, Jeff, but I still do think you have some anecdotal references.
I'm total ego.
Okay.
Total ego. Yeah.
But I you know, see moments of.
Again,
as
seeing
all of us,
seeing
know.
Moments in
Ooh, that's
me,
all psychoanalyzed.
Whether they're total ego or something just shy of that, are not nearly as valuable as seeing what there's to see in you.
Yeah. Well, I spend a lot of time with me, and sometimes it's, you know, looking at the shiny sun off the shiny car over there, and like, and other times it's, you know, some form of anecdotal history. My own special brand of it.
As we watch and feel the discernible shift from freedom from self-referencing, as contrasted with purchasing a ticket on the self-referencing cruise, that's useful because you learn texturally, viscerally, trans-psychiatrically that what we refer to as presence and the cessation of self-referencing is good. So you're incentivized to be on the lookout for it. Or, let's say, participate in things that may be available in your neighborhood at low cost to play around with it, for it to be reinforced. Even if the apparent purveyor is 100% ego.
Claimed, yes.
Oh, that's so frustrating.
What?
Even if the purveyor is 100% ego.
But that's not your concern, is it?
No, it's not your concern. Your concern is the discovery of what's present in you, as you.
I mean, that's another report, so, you know.
So any kind of evaluation, once removed from the immutable presence, in a sense.
Once removed, appears in, is nothing other than, and once removed. Yeah, sure.
Like my accounting, my progress, or my
yes.
Egoic state being in line or not.
Yes. Yep. Yep. Yeah, it's all boiling off. Yeah. But even, let's say, using the sense plenums, the sense windows, to reach for or grasp something that's evocative is lovely, and if something like noticing is suggested or encouraged, noticing can be both an extroverted appreciation of what's coming in through the sense windows, but it can also be subtler than that, which is seeing absolute cessation in the midst of the entire data stream. Here's the data stream, yes? And depending on how you tune your attention, the data stream can be profoundly diffuse, present, but diffuse. You're not really focusing on anything in particular, or a conversation, or sounds from the stereo, or an object, or an activity. So the data stream is very present, but you're not really attenuating anything in it to turn it into, right, a relationship, right? A drama, a conveyance. Yeah? When we get excited by circumstances and events, we've attenuated our attention to elements in the data stream, elements in the data field that now have become a crescendo, a giant cymbal crash. The 1812 overture just got, right, spun into view from otherwise diffuse attention. And I'm fucking pissed, or I'm really happy, or annoyed, or angry, or I've got an emergency, or I'm just something else to put on my to-do list, which I'm happy to ignore forever. You see? But without attenuating the quality of attention on elements of the data field to create the 1812 overture, it's otherwise not heard. This you could say, textural appreciation for data stream and presence without attenuation will transmute right under your nose. Into what?
You know, it sometimes it sounds like the tech is as expressed by Peter Hughes in the notes, and noticing the implication is that there's something to notice, that there is something out there.
That's right.
It's out there, and it's
well, that's the dilemma with noticing.
Yeah.
Because it becomes, the instruction is well intended, but we easily interpret it as an extroverted event to grasp or attenuate to data in the data field, using the sense plenums to discover something wondrous, which is like going to an art gallery.
And that's more of an introduction.
Yes, yes.
You know, I have a white sound. I'm sorry, I don't think
this. God, even nature is blurting you out.
A white sound machine. You know, and it's great. And it's interesting that you turn that on, and it's really helpful for people to sleep and stuff, and just hanging out, too. So I don't use it because it doesn't spend very much. But it's just this background of, you know.
This is the polar opposite of the white sound machine.
Yeah, this is like accent. But, you know, it's curious to me that overwhelming input of one of the senses, sound, will have that effect. And, you know, it's like, I think of sometimes color. Like if you were in a totally, say, blue room, or, you know, looking at blue glass, I mean, there's something wow about it, you know?
I don't know how he does it.
What about fans? Tell us about fans.
There's a selector switch. You can have white noise, or you can have fan sounds.
You're like a recordable docent at an art gallery. All you have to do is press the button, and you'll tell us all about it. I like it.
Although I can see the point to the white noise thing, you know, if you get like a therapist's office and they put the like sound thing so nobody can hear you, it's kind of like you're doing that with your mind, you know.
It's an interference pattern.
My therapist plays Korn.
Explains why you're so angry.
Exactly. Painful as shit. The encouragement, the emphasis is when it occurs, which might include your being interested or being on the lookout for it, or actively pursuing and cultivating it, like noticing. When it occurs, drop in. to diffuse attention. If there were a hierarchy, and of course we can create a million hierarchies, subtle or otherwise, first, be present. I don't know what that means, and it's useless anyway, but do it. Or see that you've been solicited, right? You're solicited by presence. Ding dong. Then drop in. Oh. Then you can appreciate, not that it's hierarchical, diffuse attention, meaning you're not attenuating your awareness or attention to anything in particular in the field to grasp it or have it grasp you to create, right, an anecdotal or hypothetical storyline. Relax in yourself. Radiance is very playful, very pushy, very evocative, very creative, loaded with lust of all kinds. Acknowledge it. Rest in yourself without attenuating your awareness to anything in particular in the field. Acknowledge that your radiant nature is very playful, lustful, loves to take you on a ride like the watch salesman. But you don't have to consent or refuse. Just the appreciation of your radiant nature gives you that, call it yogic advantage, where you can put on your seatbelt and hang out in the profundity of yourself, in the brightness of yourself, in the yogic, cellular, textural brightness of yourself, and not diffuse or distract. Not dilute, diffuse, or distract. It has more to reveal. But at least you could say now you're in a comfortable reclining position, seated or standing, to be interested in receiving what it is this has to reveal to you. Boredom is just another aspect of radiant expression. Boredom is actually restlessness. Yeah. So there's restlessness that this is somehow insufficient or not engaging enough or not enjoyable, right? Not satisfying, which is restlessness. Then we call that boredom.
It's a much better term.
Yeah. Yeah. And why does restlessness occur? Because this is a radiant motherfucker. So it, by its nature, is expressively, right, expressively, restlessly radiant. So it's likely you're going to feel that too. But you put yourself down. All that's arising does not have to turn into a long rowboat ride that could then escalate into, right, an 1812 overture in your head. Or even if it does, you might still discover that you can rest in the asan of your own awareness without fancifully or belligerently becoming overwhelmed by restlessness, by radiant, right? Yep.
Seems so paradoxical.
It's crazy. that this is what it is, how it is, why it is, where it is, and what it does is paradoxical is where you start. It gets worse.
The yoga of radiant presence.
That's why I think he probably calls it that. What he means to say is it gets worse. But that doesn't sell
no,
as well.
No, that's not going to sell yeah. as well.
Yeah, what have you been reading lately? Oh, it's a book I picked up. It gets worse. Yeah, millions of copies sold.
Yeah, go to the self-help box. It gets worse.
Yeah. What was the article you published recently that someone talked about?
It gets worse. You just can't stand being in company
nearly so much anymore. Hanging out with people just gets worse.
Well, your loyalty shifts.
Yeah. Yeah.
Loyalty is another word for your interest shifts. Your bliss matures. So your inclination then is to return to yourself as wondrous sobriety or glimpse of void rather than, you know, hang out with primates in the midst of a tear. Yeah. Yeah. Whipping up a, you know, a tornado of total bullshit.
Aren't we all so great at that?
We are.
Well, in my travels, one comment was made about I mentioned the Tantra thing and that there are, if you look at the religions in the world, most of them, it was common, that are in, their main thing is denial of something, you know, a lot of things. Saying no, let's say. This, that, Christian, Buddhist, whatever. But there are some that say yes, and those are things like indigenous religions, a lot of them, and shamanism and tantra, and this kind of thing. Where it's like you say yes, and if it doesn't seem to work, then you let it go. But you're basically saying yes to physical feelings and urges and all that jazz. And it seems to me that this may appear to many people, this is what we sort of rest in here, as saying no, but actually it's saying yes. You know, it's like one of those conundrums. Just an observation. Just a reflective
bag. Bye, everybody. Have a good day.
And take care.
Thanks, Phil.
It doesn't seem plausible to realize by saying no.
Everybody happy here?
more coffee?
Yeah. Of course. Well, thank you.
We're all happy.
Just say yes.
If you want stuff to appear in your life so that your life's more satisfying to you, then there's other conversations which might be more helpful than this one. Nature of yogic revelation is transhuman, trans life, trans circumstances and events. You know, Paul Hederman might sell it as traveling lighter, which is great if you're coming out of, you know, years of addiction and recovery and need to sprinkle some lightheartedness, very valuable lightheartedness, on your recovery and discovery and liberation process. Traveling lighter is a, right, quite a beautiful gift.
Well, these descriptions, okay, that's great. I mean, that's like the bait. You know what I mean?
Yep.
But the so-called instruction, of non-identifying or like non-suffering, as he would say, it's not necessarily clear or detailed or anything like that. It's just, in a way, it's almost another observation, which is useful. But it's no instruction on how to get it. It's not a technique. It's not a path. I like it. And it seems like the most valuable things are those things that are sort of pathless. You know, but it's still there to be done, or there to not be done, or to be encountered, or what have you. It's more the mystery. You know, it's more hanging out with the mystery that seems to me to be